Hello, everyone. This is Tatiana Gefter, creator of Soul Operator. Solo TTRPGs meet horror audio drama as we follow Tessa Whitlock in her exploration of the world of Welcome to the Habit Trails, a game by A. Yoland. If this sounds like something you would enjoy, stick around for this teaser trailer.
Hello. My name's Tessa. Tessa Whitlock. My name is Tessa Whitlock. I don't know where I am. I don't remember anything. I'm not alone. There are a lot of us here. There are kids here. We're real. This place is... There's something wrong here. Please, if you're hearing this, please help us. If you get this tape, God, is this even recording? Damn it.
Out now, everywhere you can listen to podcasts.
The Heart is a Dungeon is a TTRPG adventure focused on loss, healing, mourning, and joy. Not all subjects are suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
We see a different time, and yet a familiar face. A more specific story directs us to this place. All life began and ends in the sea or on the shore, and in a world without friends, any risk can be a door. Come gather round the fire and choose to sink or float. Weep and wail at my sad tale of the Selkie and her coat. We see a lighthouse. From these heights, we see it raised above the surrounding canopy. The coastal pygmy oaks and gnarled limbs are eclipsed and shadowed easily. It exists at the end of the rocky and forested peninsula, not too far from the small town of Cottage. It is ancient, built with hands long forgotten with stone not native to this region, and is crowned by a strange cathedral-shaped window beacon, facing to the north, the east, the south, and west, lit endlessly. It is tended to by a man filled with shadows named Benjamin. He and his daughter, Katie Did, are the permanent residents of the Lantern and have been for quite some time. It is morning. The fog is barely beginning to fade beyond what has been trapped beneath the valleys and groves of this lush and whispered space. We see the small beach belonging to the lighthouse, a fishing boat pulled up onto the shore, and a small form stepping wildly from the windy staircase to emerge onto the sand. Katie Did, when we see you at this age, what do we see?
You would see a very round, moon-faced little cherub of a child with fairly plain brown hair that's just a wild, tangled mess with a homemade crown of weaved-together seaweed
that's pretty gross, probably should have been left outside last night, but Dad forgot to check. I've already got an agenda and almost immediately start screaming with just a huge smile on my face, and you can see very pronounced dimples. Just wearing a very plain, like, tunic dress with flower pinned on it, and I'm just immediately stomping in the water the second I can.
And it's a beautiful time of the day. You see the kelp and the seaweed coming in and out of the tide. Birds playing chase the shadows as they run to and fro. Distantly, you hear the horns of ships, some seen, some unseen, as your father and his occupation and your home keep them safe. What is on Katydid's agenda this morning here at the beach with busy things to do?
I've been working on a castle that I've been building out of different shells and sand dollars and things that I find. I found a couple of things last night on our way home, so I've already got them in my pocket and very purposefully go find the little place I have it tucked away, just out of the range of where the tide comes in, but close enough that I can splash my feet in the water when the tide is high, and quickly go to work. I have quite a few things to get done before Dad sends me off to do a chore.
And when Katydid puts her heart into a thing like a sandcastle, how is that reflected? Is it in thicker walls? Is it in higher towers? Is it in sturdy, wide doors? How does that manifest itself?
I think Katydid puts very little thought into structural integrity, but what she does excel at is just almost obnoxious intricacy. But the result is beautiful. A lot of strange spiraling towers and passages to nowhere, courtyards that you can't access, but far more concerned with the way the light hits the shell that particular way. The crab that decided to take up residence there completely changed the topography of the eastern wing, but just letting the landscape participate in the creation.
How old would you say Katydid is in this memory moment?
It's hard to remember now because I've lived for so long, but I think probably 6 or 7. Still small, and always was small. Relative to others her age.
I would say it's also difficult to remember because there's many memories like this. You lost in joy and imagination underneath the fog and the salt, finding a creative path, a creative outlet as you dig through the sand, only to hear the loud calls of your father, Benjamin, gruff. Probably a headache this morning, as he has most mornings, yelling out for you from the top of the tower. Katie! Katie! Having always thought your name to be a little too playful, just like your heart. So he calls you with how he sees you, Katie, and he calls to you now.
I brush the sand off of my hands on my dress and very businesslike assess my work, straight face, and turn and march kind of over dramatically to my dad. I don't dilly-dally for long, but make sure everything is in its place and quickly respond.
And as your day steps into shadow, the shadow of your father and all those expectations that aren't fair, eyes unseen watch you walk away from the sea. Eyes that won't reveal themselves for some years to come. They notice your to's and fro's just like the flotsam and jetsam of the ocean and the way you're just a piece of driftwood sometimes next to your father. And they long for a better dream for you. Time passes as simply as a ship, or a season, or a life, and a few years later, it's twilight at the same lighthouse near the town of Cottage. And once again, we see Katie Did down on the little beach reserved just for you and your father and his boat and his screams. How have you changed over the years?
Not as much as one might think, but a little taller. Still the same deep dimples and round face. Still the same wild brown hair, usually with some assortment of seaweed and sticks, whether by accident or on purpose. But her eyes seem a bit more dramatically large relative to her face. Perhaps she never really grew out of that childlike doe-eyed look, and it's beginning to look a little bit more unnatural as she's getting older. But fairly plain and just simply dressed, probably scrubbing Dad's boat, quickly wrapping up some chores, trying to perhaps grab a minute to look for shells before going back inside.
And this time of day, mixed with this time of work, you always notice your hands and those strange scars between each finger and how they change when they're wet or when they're salty or when they're tired. But it's only for a moment because that sky is beautiful and the sun sets as softly as it can for shining so bright in this place. The lighthouse appears to be jealous. But somewhere out in the water, someone is watching. What does that someone look like, Pyrophira?
This form is simple, but needed. Neath the crown of golden kelp that adorns the rack of antlers that I wear in this particular shape, I stand on the sea itself, not on a sandbar, but amidst the waters. A full-grown moose stands at the edge of the sea, but her eyes glitter with something else. The knowledge of centuries past, of the sea's secrets, of humanity, and of this small child who rushes about the shore, much like her namesake. I haven't gotten close enough just yet, not to see the color of their eyes, if they're the same as their mother's.
As the sun is setting, because these shadows don't last long this time of day, I'd say you take it in most days, Katie Did. You watch the sun rise and set as truly as any witness does. You've documented most of them. You can hear your father now just beginning to make the rounds through the valley, ringing his bell to shoo away the lovers that come to find shadows near the lighthouse where they can steal everything. And you look out over those waves, you see the playful small animals. And what is it, Pyrophira, that beckons when you beckon? Or what force or call comes from you?
Well, in this particular environment, this poor child has found herself in, I begin with subtleties. The sea not quite drawing in as it pulls up on the shore, draws back in, but ever encroaching, almost as if it were going to swallow that little beach hole. Enough for me to step into a new form, something more familiar when I do approach them.
And what do we see when we see a more familiar form of yours?
I imagine it's as the moment I set one of those gargantuan hooves at first, this massive moose with golden kelp hanging from her antlers, shifting into a rather diminutive woman, maybe her mid-40s. Her hair starting to gray, but still a mousy brown, and bright silver eyes standing out from tanned skin as she turns to look at Katie and say, "It's you. It really is."
"It's me. Who are you?"
"You wouldn't have remembered me. You were just a babe, and With a little too much familiarity, she approaches you, hands outstretched, almost to cup your face.
I think I would instinctually kind of shrink back. Did you just come out of the water?
Oh, of course you wouldn't remember me. You were so young then, but yes, I did. Does that surprise you? Frighten you?
I think I would look down at my hands, kind of instinctually. I'm not sure what I feel. You said you've met me before?
Oh, I have. And your mother. And I draw in a bit closer. Her nose is almost touching as I give you this inspective look. Oh, you've her eyes. Same eyes that always knew too much, saw too much. But where are my manners? I am Pyrofera. I was a friend of your mother's, matron of this sea.
You knew my mother?
I did. And you know not many things that were attached to her. And I reach out for your hands, running them over your knuckles, the little areas in between where scars form.
I think you won me over the second you mentioned my mom. Dad never talked about her. What, can you tell me everything about her? How did you know her?
My smile is warm and that grandmotherly sort of course, dear, but my eyes harden just that little bit, turning from human to that all-encasing black of seals. Before turning, looking back at you and saying, darling, of course. Sit with me. Take me to the place that brings you the most joy. I want to see your world. It has been too long. I've been waiting to speak to you.
I would bring her to the place where I was building my sandcastle all those years ago. Since then, changes in weather and things like that have created a little alcove. Nothing dramatic, but just out of sight of the lighthouse, about as private as it gets around here. And the old sandcastle's long since washed away, but there's all kinds of little creations I've made from shells and glass and things that I've found, stashed away in a place that Dad wouldn't bother to go looking for them. And it's not far from there. Nothing is far from here, but I'll take you there.
When nothing is far from here, it's always easy to take you there. And you hear your father's bell, letting you know where he is, letting you know which part of the valley the lovers were drawn to tonight. It seems to change with the moon every night, those pesky lovers. And the sun is down now. The silver of the moon is across the sea. All your little trinkets sparkle and glow in the dark. Not the deep dark, the new dark. The lighthouse beam cutting swaths through the clouds and the fog as you hear the long distant hum of ships and sailors.
I'm just in awe of you, and I lead you there, show you the best spot to sit, and just kind of stare at you, just taking in all the little differences in your face. I'm just enchanted.
Imagine I look quite regal. It's an image of, you know, a monarch sitting before her subjects. The golden horn adornments now forming a cloak that wraps around me, spread out on the sand as I inspect all the little things that you've collected, the area around you. I haven't said much, but I'm looking around almost as if I'm seeking some sort of conclusion about this place. After a moment's silence, I'll open and say, what do you know of your mother?
My dad said that she died when I was a baby and that it made him sad to talk about it. So that's pretty much all I know. He said I looked like her.
At least he tells partial truths. Your mother is an exceptional woman, beyond even my power. Her curiosity was always what drove her. Not to be outmatched by her compassion, but those were what led her. And I have a feeling those lead you as well. And I pick up one of your shiny adornments. Maybe it's a shell, and put my ear to it. You've her instincts. She had just as many shells as you. Glasses, all sorts of little tidbits from both our world and yours. Ours, I should say. Here, give it a listen, and I'll hand you the shell.
Ho, ho, hold on. This year, I know exactly what I'm getting my sleigh, dear. Holiday gift cards from Hero Forge, with a wide range of options from tabletop miniatures, physical and digital, to 3D printed dice you design, and also custom keychains. Upgrade your gaming experience with the Pro subscription, which grants you access to new item drops a week early, and unleash your inner bard by designing wild creations, giving them the perfect mood lighting and backdrops with the photo booth tool. All that and more, starting at only $3.99 a month. Avoid those long lines and have your Hero Forge gift cards delivered straight to your email at heroforge.com.
Hi, my name is Robin.
And my name is Dylan.
Do you like Choices Matter video games?
If so, we started this podcast, Dorkspawn, so that I could show my best friend my favorite RPG series of all time, Dragon Age.
And now that I've played it, we want to share more of these choice-heavy games with each other.
Right now, Robin is showing me Mass Effect, which I have never played before.
And we are going to continue playing through these games together and discussing them book club style as we go.
You can join our Discord and play along with us, and tune into Dorkspawn every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
I don't think my dad likes me very much. He doesn't like to look me in the eyes and... I don't know. He always seems grumpy. I always thought he blamed me for my mom or something. Do you know something that I don't?
Not just my face rumbles a little bit. Emotions like waves of both grief, anger... We're settling into something as smooth as the top of a pond, before I say. I do, young one. But I reach out, squeeze your head in that grandmotherly way, warmth and warmth. I would put his feelings, for most mortals, to be that of grief, that strange mixture of guilt and longing and nostalgia, but no. I have a feeling it's something more than that. What do you hear to that shell? Tell me what you hear.
I'll pick it up and listen.
Hear the thrumming of waves, the call of birds. Soft sounds of seal pups hearkening to their mothers. It's all too much for a shell and somehow familiar all at once. I think as I see that, like, realization on your face of, like, oh, this is something magical. Child, your blood, your heart is of the sea. And I extend a hand, transmorphing it into that of a seal's claw. How much do you know of Selkie?
I... I've heard stories, but... And I'll hold my hand up to your seal paw, and you'll kind of see the scars in between my fingers. I never knew for sure, but... One of the kids at school told me that they cut my fingers because I had flippers. I thought he was just being mean, but I always knew something was different about me.
Now your father is going to roll a sniff the wind as he begins to wonder where you are.
Oh, shit.
All right. That is an
8, so that is a hit.
Oh no.
What is here that I haven't seen yet? And I think that's going to be... It's dark, there's no fire or anything lit, but from this height, he sees something next to you, and there's a fear in him that is too much for a shell. And he begins to make his way down. It'll take him a minute to get here, but he's on his way.
I'm just gonna take your hand in my flipper and say, cruelty of children aside, he was right. It was taken from you, your heritage, your family, your mother. All of that was stolen from you. I could give that back to you one day.
Why not now?
You start hearing the bell of your father as he's calling out your name. Still, Katie. Never Katie did. Still, Katie. And you hear him making his way down the very steps we saw you exit as a child.
He'll probably be mad if he sees you. I should go, and I'm just gonna turn and run.
Katie did, wait!
Once again, time passes away. And we find ourselves at a very familiar lighthouse near the small town of Cottage. And once again, we find Katie did. Taller, slightly older. Any other changes we should know about, Katie did?
More changes than last time. The cherub-like roundness is starting to become more curvy. Still... a little chubby in the face, big dimples, but a little more of a somberness, not quite as much of a smile. Her eyes still seem a little too large, and it almost seems as though her irises are starting to expand and encompass more of the whites of her eyes, and just starting to give her a little bit more of an alien appearance. Subtle enough, but just off enough to almost be a little unsettling to some people. Hair longer, tied in a braid now, a little bit more put together, and a bit more of an air of melancholy as she goes about her chores.
Once again, it is dusk. The sea is the same. It never changes. This lighthouse is the same. It never changes. The ringing bell of your father disrupting love never changes. Katie did. How are you ending your day today as the sun is setting?
I make sure that for as long as I'm within visual range, I'm going to just do chores, even if I'm just busying myself with sweeping that doesn't need doing. Avoiding going inside any earlier than I have to, and just kind of watching the seagulls. I've been learning to play the tambourine, but I don't like to play it when my dad is around, so I've got it on my hip, just kind of watching for him to go inside.
And you hear him realize he's cleared out all the bushes, all the brambles, made sure everyone's shooed away, and he does drift into the lighthouse for his usual stew and to begin drinking his usual desserts. The lighthouse is strange, looking at it from down here. All the doorways, the passages, are wider than is required. The steps are even a little taller than one would expect for a normal human. You've lived here your whole life and you still don't understand where this place came from, with its strange cathedral window type openings up above and the burning lantern flame just dangling. But at this moment, I think something else catches your eye, your heart, your destiny, as out in the water, something watches. Pyrophira, how do you approach this time, years later.
Time has come. If we don't take her now, then the land will take her. Therefore, I'm going to call upon my court, my sisters. This is a mission of most urgency. A cloaking must be well attended.
Well, that's 2 sixes. That's a 12.
On a 10 plus hit, they answer your call at once. The sea changes, Katie did. Across your vision with a familiar form in the center, but strange forms to the left and right, a whole contingent rises into your story. They are undeniably present in their insisting that you are aware of them. The lighthouse is aware of them. It's impossible to not be, as the court of the Selkie in this region have arrived to call you home.
I didn't think you were gonna come back. I don't think I would even think. I would just start running towards them.
The sea is boiling. Boiling with life, of movement. Seals of all coat patterns, bright white stripes, gray rings, all of it. It's almost as if everyone from every corner of the world has come. Come for this moment. And I stand in a mortal form. Fingers still proudly webbed. Hair braided, cloak before me, holding something in my hands. Outreach my arms, an embrace, waiting for Katie did.
I just crash into you like a wild animal. I've never really known any sort of maternal affection, and it's almost violent how quickly I cling on to you, not even understanding why. I pretty well convinced myself you weren't coming back, and I just start sobbing into you.
Oh, shh, child, we're here now. All of us are here. Your family, your mothers, your foremothers. No tears. Tonight is a happy occasion.
And it's almost too much for a shell. As all these feelings collide and crash, and the tides move back and forth of hope but fear, of wanting but stability and stillness, the sea gives and takes equally. Katydid has seen that their entire life. There's something about this moment that I would say makes itself very sure in Katydid's spirit or heart, that this is not something that will return again. This is the last moment to catch this tide before it's too late.
I had spent the last 3-4 years it's been since the last time we met, regretting that I didn't go with you then. And I think I thought I had already missed that opportunity to have a second chance. I think I'm just completely overwhelmed, and the thought of turning back doesn't even cross my mind.
In this moment, there is no bell warning you, which feels like a slight betrayal, having always seen that as its own little lighthouse, keeping you from crashing into something hard and permanent. But you hear a voice not too far down the beach. Katie, who are you talking to? And his voice goes still as he sees all the forms, the familiar forms, and Pyrophira holding a familiar cloth. Katie did? Please don't.
Choice is her own, Benjamin. Remain on shore, land creature.
You see his cheeks become more red than they usually are from the drink. But a familiar subduedness and a fear that's a little too big for a shell comes over him. Katie did. Your father is obviously moving towards you slowly without saying anything, watching your new companions carefully. You have a moment but it appears as he is taking steps towards you, but seems wary of touching the water.
For a moment, I'm struck with compassion, and I just hold a hand up. Dad, please just let me go. I know you did your best, but you just need to let me go.
In his eyes, you see that he cannot forgive himself enough to hope for a better outcome. And as you hold up your hands and remind him of the shadows he stepped into out of sorrow and brokenness and selfishness, he also realizes in his hand he is holding a blade of cold iron. And he seems torn between letting go and fighting for in this moment.
I think for the first time, a flash of my winter form would come across, and almost like I go grayscale and my eyes flip from black to white and my mouth falls open and the wind just howls out of my mouth. And as Game Master, because I missed, you get to choose. It gets away from me. I have no control over what it does.
Everyone, and I mean everyone, is driven to flee. For Benjamin, that means running back to this ancient lighthouse and old hurts and isolation and safety and pattern. For Pyrophyra and their court, that means diving beneath the waves. For Katydid, that means a decision. For they are all leaving you here in the fossils of what was once a sandcastle and a home.
For a moment, I think that I get caught in this wind that kind of swirls around me for a moment, and it takes, I don't know how long to even realize what's happening, but as I realize that everyone is fleeing from me, I'm overcome with a grief for the first time that completely overwhelms all of my senses. And as I sink to my knees, I gradually turn to stone. As I hold my face and little crystallized tears just begin to fall before they turn to stone.
I imagine that with this outcry, this child, everything has been taken from her. Of course she doesn't know how to use her abilities. But I can remain. I am Elvis here. I am Sea Matron. And in my jaws, in the form of a leopard seal, holds her mother's cloak, still ringed, still beautiful, still waiting for its master to return to it. The child's turned to mundaneness. We have to. We must before it takes her, before banality can claim her. It's this great dark form that sweeps behind this stone child, and the cloak slides on like a skin, crawling, stuck to your like hair after being in the water for too long. Before the dark form slips away with the rest of its multitude of sisters.
At this proximity, you see a side story as you notice that the stone of Katydid matches the stone of that lighthouse, that foreign dark gray stone, only for a moment because it begins to fleck off.
I think for the first time, her big doughy eyes make sense. They're the one thing that doesn't change as her flesh kind of blends in with this new skin that's forming. But there are similarities, very similar freckle pattern going up her face, very fuzzy around the cheeks, very round, still young enough to have a little bit of that baby fur, but definitely beginning to age out of it. And for a second stretches and tries to move really awkwardly, sort of like a baby giraffe trying to stand up for the first time, but very quickly taking to the water and finding it much more natural to just let it carry her. Still small.
What does your Selkie companion look like?
Leopard seals are massive predators, and I imagine for Katydid,
First time in the water, this pup has finally felt the cold of her home hitting her for the first time. It's almost a little imposing, watching as this dark figure, this shadow, a shark maybe, coming in before two eyes. Glowing slightly blue with the twilight, hatching but little light is still there. Greet her, and between bright white teeth, a smile is found. Welcome. You're finally home. Your real home.
The world looks alive for the first time, Katie did. You see swordfish and seahorses and manatees moving through these deep tide pools as the shore just drifts further and further into darkness. You see tiny little knighted pixies riding on seahorses with kelp lances and armor made out of shells. You see little castles for crab monarchs to defend their territory, and all the kingdoms of the ocean are beginning at your feet. It's so lovely that you don't hear your name being screamed from the shore. It's so pulling that you're out of sight before you see the form of your father beginning to wade knee deep, waist deep into the sea, holding a shiny and sharp reminder of who he is. Because you're pulled by beauty, by freedom, by affinity, as you both take off into the water, you see all types of adventures with seagrass and red algae and soft corals. Where do you go? What draws you? What do you show her first, Pyrophira, in this endless kingdom? Where does your joy take you?
Joy takes me to where it died, where it was stolen from me. But here it can be revived. The alcove that her mother and I once shared. I guide her through the darkening seas, through swirls, through curious faces, seeing her mother's cloak once more taking life. To a little reef, small, not even large enough for larger predators to take interest in. But almost like an arena in how it's shaped, with fan corals and brain corals and all manner of fish, forming a ring, peace. I lay down on the white sand and, in a motherly fashion, lay on my side, opening a flipper. Join me. Lay down. Take your first rest in your new home.
I don't know if I would, if I've ever cuddled, very quickly take to it and curl up. It's like a little fuzzy baby. I might not leave this form for quite some years after this.
What does one dream of when their entire life has just become a dream?
Probably at first the things that I've left behind, but I think that those dreams become more vague and far away fairly quickly until that life was the dream.
The small bubbles that drift from your sleeping form burst on the surface of the ocean, and you hear little snippets of your life. Moments of you singing as a child, talking with friends, crying alone. They just release the sound above the sea, near a floating form face down, a man. Familiar man who you'll never see again, who didn't take to the waves as easy as you. It could be decades before you think of that again. Time is strange down here, where all is shadow and hunger and joy. You find time and affinity and family in a way where you don't have to change your accent or your language because you all speak the same. Before Katydid has reached a full-grown Selkie, what are the most important lessons you attempt to teach her? What direction do you guide her that it might be reflected later in her story?
Ralfe, rules of three are most keen to listen to. I impart these in travels through the world to my own home of ice and snow. The first lesson, always stay away from the mortal world. May your secrets remain ours. Amidst the sweltering Amazon through brown water and blind pink dolphins, the second comes across. Your cloak is your most treasured possession. Let no other see it or hold it. And the third is we return back to the seas that she took form in. In that same coral grove, never set foot on land, and never stay before past midnight.
Years pass for you, Katie did. There are sorrows later, but much later. Now will be a time of growth and discovery that is almost too much for a shell to hold, but you're able to hold it. One day, your life will change again. You will return to this lighthouse. You will return to almost a similar sad story of your father's. You'll relive steps you wish you would have avoided. But for now, all is joy and all is free, and there is no sign that you will one day become the Weeping Gale. Hey, I'm Rara. Thanks for listening to season two of The Heart is a Dungeon. You can find us kind of anywhere you get your podcast these days. We've grown.
I'm Feral Moonbeam, and I am playing the Weeping Gale. You can find me on Blue Sky, and that's pretty much it. I don't social media.
I wish.
But you can try.
Oh my goodness gracious, thank you for having me. But tonight I was your Pyrophira, matron of the Northern Sea. But if you want to check out more of me, check me out at Nuff of Abbey, where I'm doing indigenerd shit, I'm doing Dene shit, and I'm doing lots of other gay shit with lots of amazing people. So if you want to see that shit, make sure to check me out on Blue Sky and Twitter, at Nuff of Abbey. Go on there, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Please leave us a review if you like it, and if you don't, send us good thoughts. We'll get better.